everybody. Welcome back to the Shuttle Pod, the official Trek movie podcast. This is episode number 33. We're recording this on March 22nd. I'm Brian Drew, and I am here with my colleagues Jared Whitley.
Hello, friends.
The editor-in-chief of Trek Movie, Kayla Iacovino.
Hey, everybody.
And welcome one of our longtime colleagues here at Trek Movie, Mr. Matt Wright.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome, Matt.
Hey, guys.
Welcome to the Shuttle Pod, Matt.
Thanks a lot, you guys. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to finally have you on.
Yeah, seriously. Matt, you want to give the audience a little
background on your time at Trek Movie? I've been at Trek Movie, since fall 2006. Just about as long as Kayla. Kayla and I are like sort of the old school around here. I was, you know, a guy who was just like, hey, there's a new remastered, you know, TOS coming up. And Tony, the founder of the website, had kind of had a scoop about it. So I reached out to him and I said, well, A, what do you know? And can I know what you know? And B, hey, I could totally do the weekly screen caps as they aired. Because this was in 2006. This was still like the idea of syndication still, which is kind of a crazy thought these days.
Yeah.
So they were still syndicating these newly remastered copies of TOS every weekend, one a weekend. And so I said, well, you know, I can do that. I'm a technical guy. I've got a PC TV capture card, so I could totally record them, do a little, like, you know, what's changed, what did they tweak kind of stuff. And he took me up on it, and I've just been doing all kinds of, you know, articles, home, the video reviews, you know, the home video releases, all that kind of stuff ever since. So that's my little background.
All right. Well, once again, welcome. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, Matt's one of the guys who makes Trek Movie work, who maybe his name you don't see as much as it deserves to be seen. So delighted to have him on the show.
Oh, well, thanks, Jared.
Absolutely.
Yep, lifelong TOS fan, so, you know.
Especially because it's worth noting that Matt is, you know, home video editor and editor in general and tech support.
Yeah.
So
when there's a problem on Twitter.
It's a lot of behind the scenes work.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we run into a big snafu on the website, it's usually Matt that pulls us out of it.
Hopefully it didn't cause it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Matt is also, we're making a concerted effort to try to talk a little bit more about Enterprise, to try to revisit that, and Matt has a little bit more Enterprise expertise than the rest of us, which is perhaps some foreshadowing for this episode.
Oh, perhaps, huh? Circling back to that home video reviewing thing, that's how I got really back into looking at, you know, taking a second look at Enterprise, was when they released on Blu-ray. I got to review the season sets, and I'm going, you know, there's a lot to like in here. You know, it's not all terrible, unlike a lot of people.
Yeah, I can't remember if we mentioned on the show or not recently, but I rewatched the pilot, and I think it's the strongest pilot of all the Star Trek series.
Yeah, and everyone,
it's very good.
At the time, the industry certainly thought so too. Like, everyone was like, "Oh, these ratings are amazing. We did such a good job," and then it all fell off a cliff. You know?
Yeah. If you look at the ratings for Enterprise, it's like a ski slope.
Yeah, it's really a shame in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, is there anything we want to talk about on the Discovery front?
Well, what's happened in the last week since we recorded last?
Well, since we recorded last, I believe the big news item was that Discovery now has a captain on its bridge.
Finally.
Yep. Been waiting a long time.
Yeah. Mr. Jason Isaacs, who is Captain Lorca.
Captain Lorca.
I don't know if I have a first name.
Yep.
Yeah. And the thing that was cool to me when I saw this is, of course, he's most famous for his participation in the Harry Potter franchise. He played Lucius Malfoy, the father of Draco Malfoy. And remember in the Nemesis episode, we talked about how important the 1-2 punch of the Lord of the Rings franchise and the Harry Potter franchise were in sort of popularizing fandom that had until then, a fandom phenomenon that had until then really been restricted just to Star Trek fans. And so I think that was cool, just the coincidence of seeing a little bit of magic brought to the Star Trek universe via this casting.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart, you know, casting choice, actually.
Very smart. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And of course, it'll be interesting because like a lot of us, I associate him with Malfoy. So that means, like, okay, is he going to be bad? You know, is there something dark side?
Yes, yes. Okay.
Captain? Like,
yeah, my immediate reaction. I'm so glad you said that, Matt. My immediate reaction was, well, is he a red shirt or is he a traitor?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Or does he die in the first episode?
Exactly, a red shirt.
There's always that, right? We can pull a Voyager, right, and start killing a bunch of the crew off.
Yeah, I think, it's one of the two.
That's what I was thinking.
There's no way he lasts past the first couple episodes, probably not the pilot.
And we've talked about this amongst ourselves, but especially if there's this idea that, you know, that he's not really the main character, that the focus is not really the captain.
Sure.
It would make a lot of sense for him not to stick around too long, you know?
Right.
So, we'll see.
All right. Well, we'll find out.
Indeed, we will. All right. So the topic of today's show is minor characters in the Star Trek franchise. And the prerequisite for being included in this list was that you had to appear on Trek 3 times or less. So let's tee up the first one. We're going to play sound bites of every single person, and then we'll discuss them afterwards. So here's the first one. Mr. Kevin Riley.
Why isn't Mr. Sulu at the station?
Magnetic pull compensated for, sir. Orbit steady.
Take over here, and...
Yes, sir.
You haven't answered my question. Where is Mr. Sulu?
Have no fear, O'Reilly's here. And one Irishman is worth 10,000.
You're relieved, Mr. Riley. Lieutenant Uhura, take over this station.
Yes, sir.
Now, that's what I like. Let the women work, too. Universal suffering.
Report the sick bay, Mr. Riley.
Sick bay? Exactly where I was heading. Sir.
Where's Joe? Well, he died, didn't he?
Yes. I know he was a friend of yours. This must be a terrible shock.
You know what Joe's mistake was? He wasn't born an Irishman.
All right. Have no fear, O'Reilly's here.
Love the
answer. So, what do we think about the great Kevin Riley?
I'm very sad he's on this list because I would have loved to have seen him more.
Oh, totally. I really liked Riley. Too. He always seemed like really personable and one of those extra, you know, to crib a TNG episode kind of thing, a Lower Decks kind of guy that we should definitely see more of.
Yeah.
He caught on quite a bit with the fan base. I mean, the actor who played him, Bruce Hyde, I think was on the convention circuit pretty much since the beginning of the Star Trek conventions.
Like, yeah, that's right.
And the character got featured quite a bit in novels. I think he got bought back quite a few times. I think even in some comic books. So it's a shame that they kind of never found a way to, like, even give him a quick cameo in one of the movies.
Yeah, that would have been good.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Sure, because they did that for Mr. Kyle.
He
shows back up on the Reliant.
On the Reliant, yep.
Yeah.
And then Grace Lee Whitney pops up a couple times, and Christine Chapel appears in
Of course.
Voyage
so,
Home
come on.
And TMP. Yeah.
Bruce Hyde, he should have been in there a couple times, a little bit.
Yeah, they could have made him, like, the first officer of the Excelsior or something.
Mm-hmm, totally.
Indeed.
So another thing I like about Riley, it's sort of amusing to me, is that he was almost the first sort of red shirt, of course he wasn't wearing red, death, but then actually gets saved in his second episode, in his second appearance.
Yeah.
We save him, and then we never see him again. But he does get saved by McCoy. McCoy pulls him through.
Yeah, when we did for the 50th anniversary that week last year, each of us like live tweeted an episode, and that was the episode I did, The Conscience of the King. And I see that coming up, and I'm like, oh no, he's not going to make it. And then he did.
Yeah, you really think that. It's true. Lenore with her weird little spray bottle, you know, he's done for.
Yeah, you would have thought they would have brought him back, because he actually had kind of a shared connection with Kirk.
He did.
They were both on that planet when Kodos declared, you know, martial law and executed all those people. So you would have thought maybe they could have explored the bond those two might have had or something. But
yeah, and it's actually sort of flashing forward. We kind of know that would have worked out pretty nicely from to jump universes. We know in Beyond that one of the best parts of it was the Kirk and Chekhov side story and their relationship. You know, that mentor.
Yeah.
So we totally could have had, you know, a Kevin Riley kind of story with Prime Captain Kirk there, but
alas.
If they do a fourth New Trek movie and they need someone to fill that role, maybe they could cast a new Kevin Riley, because they've said they're not gonna They're not going to recast. Good call.
That'd be a lot of fun, actually.
You know, that's a great idea.
That's a great idea. Oh, hey, Bad
thank
Robot.
You. Yes. Yes. I am great.
Are you listening, JJ?
Yeah.
You know what, though? I have to say, I would like...
You know you are.
I would like to see the male-to-female ratio improved a little bit.
Oh, that is also true. You know who they could bring back is... this is a little slight tangent, but remember the navigator who was there in Into Darkness? And they just called her Darwin. She was kind of the shaved head lady that was there for a little.
Oh yeah, that's right.
They should flesh her out because she seemed like an interesting character.
Yeah,
there's a way to, you know, get the gender ratio a little back.
We need more ladies on the Enterprise. Yeah.
Definitely.
Mm. Okay, never mind.
Okay,
it was a terrible idea. Take it back. But no, don't worry. We have a couple of great ladies coming up in our minor characters list.
We do. Yeah.
And would you like to introduce one of those for us, Mr. Whitley?
Yeah, let's jump on one who just barely makes it. She appears in three episodes, two episodes of TNG and one episode of Deep Space Nine. She is an archaeologist. She is a rogue, if you will. She seems like she probably would have dated Han Solo in high school. Her name is Vosh.
Vosh.
Yeah, Vosh.
Hello.
Oh, it's you.
Oh, that's not much of a greeting.
Look, I don't wish to appear rude, but I am not seeking Jamaharon.
All right. But you really should try it sometime.
If I try it, it will be at a time of my own choosing.
That's fine with me. It's not as though I was offering to help you find it.
I assumed that because of the way you welcomed me the other day...
I'm sorry if I embarrassed you.
I don't recall saying I was embarrassed. It's just that I prefer to be acquainted with the women that I kiss.
That's understandable. The name's Vosh.
I'm King Vosh.
Ah, Vosh. Thank you, Matt. I was waiting for that.
Yeah, had to do it.
Okay.
Hashtag Team Vosh.
Yeah, Vosh is great.
Yeah, we love Vosh.
Of all of Picard's random love interests, Vosh is my favorite.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Why is that? Why is she your favorite?
It felt like you know, a lot of times they write in these love interests and it's really obviously just a vessel to carry the plot. It's a throwaway, and it always is kind of weird. And there's something about Vosh that like pulled out this side of Picard that we didn't get to see very often, which is like this more playful side, more because Vosh doesn't give two shits, you know, about anything. No. She's like you said, she's a rogue. She does what she wants, but she's also she's an archaeologist. She's interested in this, similar things to Picard, like exploring and all these things and learning. But comes at it in a totally different perspective. And it loosened him up a little bit.
Definitely.
I agree.
The other thing I like about Vosh is her presence in the middle of season 3 is an indication of the maturation of the series, because if she'd appeared any time before, I think she would have been a love interest for Riker.
Oh, interesting point. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, because that's a good point. Because, I mean, Captain's Holiday was basically written as a response to Patrick complaining that all Picard did was stand on the bridge.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he wanted him to, quote unquote, get involved in doing a bit more fighting and screwing, let's say. That's not the word he used, but we're a family podcast.
Yeah.
So, yes, I agree. A season before this, she probably would have been Riker's.
I think she has more in common with Picard.
Absolutely.
Oh, she definitely does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's also a scene when she comes back in the Cupid where Riker, I think, like tries to hit on her and he gets the wind taken out of his sails, or I guess the warp taken out of his nacelles.
Nice, no Jared.
Thank you.
Sorry. That was really, really, that was one of my favorite puns of yours.
Thank you, Kayla. Thank you,
Kayla. Sorry, I'm back. That was really, really good.
And we're back. Good. Well, I'm glad that could tickle you the right way.
It was already amusing watching Riker get like lose the girl to Picard. Because I can imagine him thinking, like, this has never happened to me before. I'm losing my mojo.
Yeah, well, and that's also the same season where when Barclay gets super intelligence and Deanna drops that she'd been on a date with Reg, or that Reg had asked her out, and he says, oh, you mentioned he asked you out. You didn't mention if he was successful. And she goes, huh, and just walks away and doesn't answer him.
Yeah.
So I guess that was what the post-Best of Both Worlds life meant for Riker.
Yeah, see, he could have been his own captain, you know, taking up that captaincy or whatever, but no.
All right, so we spoke about Captain's Holiday, but Vash also appeared later on.
Yes.
On DS9.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Jared?
Yeah, in two of the three episodes with Vash, she's actually paired with Q, which is interesting. One was the Cupid that we just mentioned, and then the Deep Space Nine one was called Q-less. And it was the first season Deep Space Nine where they were still getting their footing and they were more inclined to try to piggyback off the successes of their Big Brother series.
And like so TNG did.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so bringing there's one episode where they bring back Lursa and Bator as the bad guys for the episode, and then a couple of episodes later they bring back Q and Vash. And the thing that's interesting about that is they resolve the fact that because Q can take her anywhere in time and space, that she might get lost somewhere, but thanks to the Bajoran wormhole, they're able to find her. Miles O'Brien recognizes her. And the thing that's cool about this is she gets to have a little bit of a competition with Quark, which is a character who she fits with really well because they're both roguish. They're both, you know, entrepreneurs in a world full of, you know, ethical people who otherwise like to give speeches rather than steal stuff and resell it for a profit. It's not a terrific episode, I'm going to be completely honest, but there's some good dynamics among Quark, Q, and Vash.
Oh, but Sisko gets to punch Q, so that's kind of fun.
That is a highlight. That was also a very important way to show how that captain was going to be different than the other one.
And then they kind of underline it a little too hard when he literally says that to Q, mm-hmm. but it's nice.
Yes, because... I was going to preempt you. I was going to say, as Kayla might say, they really hung a lantern on that.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, just when you mentioned it was a season one episode, so that it was, they're still trying to find their footing. Whenever anyone talks about season one of Deep Space Nine, I'd just like to say, Ella Moraine.
Move along home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well placed.
It's kind of a cute episode, to be fair. But
it's not as terrible as people say it is. And I love the twist at the end.
Yeah, it's actually not that terrible, but it's funny how much people hate it.
It is funny how much people hate it.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever hating it when I watched it. Maybe we should
do it. Is it too much to do a deep dive into Move Along Home?
Mm. I don't know how deep you can go.
Maybe if we did a deep dive into season one of Deep Space Nine.
We could do that. And That's a good idea. We could also, you know, we could do a deep dive into what the community holds as the worst Star Trek episodes. So Move Along Home and Threshold, those sure. kind of things.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I like that idea.
Maybe we could make it a challenge to find redeeming qualities in these episodes. That
or you could morph it into a guilty pleasure.
I like that even more.
Yeah. Or a guilty pleasure kind of thing, too.
We could do this that one, too. Yeah.
This is a good moment for those of you at home who are listening to this to go into our comment section and say what kind of stuff you'd like to see us talk about in the future.
Yeah, and which there are so many possibilities. Worst episodes or guilty pleasure episodes, what are your guilty pleasure episodes? Or what is your most hated episode?
When we did our most disappointing episodes, that was one of the best ones we've done, I thought.
Yeah, I love that episode, you guys. That was really great.
Thanks, Matt. I also like the precision of the adjective that we used. Rather than just worst, we said disappointing. Because that sets
different parameters. That was a different... That's nuanced, right? Because in that, we were looking for things that were either hyped or for some reason, you know, we had... There was some standard by which they would be judged and they failed to meet that standard. So it's...
This is
really just saying, what are the bad episodes? So these episodes, the most disappointing, weren't necessarily bad.
No, not at all.
We're disappointing.
They fell flat somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
The warp was taken out of their nacelles.
There it is. Well put.
Bringing it back.
Let's see. And so anything else about Vash?
Well, so we should say something about Cupid, right? I mean.
Yeah, Maid Marian herself.
That's right.
And of course, she doesn't really care to be rescued, which is pretty awesome. You know, she's over it. She's gonna escape herself.
Her and Roe, Ensign Roe, are two really strong female characters, and I wish we had seen more women like that. Like, yeah, I talk a lot about. You, people know, I think, from listening to this podcast, like I'm a big Beverly fan. Some people aren't, but I'm a huge Beverly fan. And, you know, Troy certainly has her strong moments, but they're still, like, sort of cut from the same fabric in terms of, like, their characteristics. And I just love that, like, Vosh is the kind of woman I want to be. You know what I mean? Just, like just does what she wants. She's kind of badass. Explores.
Maybe without the moral ambiguity.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe
yeah,
without the moral ambiguities, but just
Kayla, we kind of like the woman you are right now, to be perfectly honest.
Well, thank you. But I mean, I like she's badass in her own way. Like she's
her immediate reaction when the guy to Gastonbury, I'm saying his name wrong, when he captures her is, okay, how do I think my way out of this? How do I turn a profit from something like this?
And like Vosh is the kind of person that like if she gets caught up in a situation, like she can handle herself and she's not going to get taken, you know, like I could see, you know, like Beverly and Troy both have this sort of an innocent side to them where you could see like someone swindling them in the market. You know what I mean? But like Vosh isn't going to take a bad price.
Well, she does the swindling. See?
Yeah, she's a swindler. Yeah.
But there's a certain power in that I think it's cool to show a woman have that kind of power.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very true.
She and John Delancey have some good chemistry, too.
Yes, they do.
I like when they appear in their, desert safari outfit, and he says very, to rub it in Picard's face, he says, we're going to have fun together.
Yeah, that is pretty, it's quite the little challenge he throws down.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yep.
All right, well, let's take a trip back in time to the days of the NX-01.
But that lithium matrix has got to be aligned within 0.3 microns. The specs say 0.5. Who do you think wrote those specs? A warp field specialist?
Exactly. Some guy who's probably never been outside the solar system. I've spent the last 3.5 years crawling inside one of these engines. I know what I'm talking about.
Aye, sir.
Biggs, Pierce, I want you to recalibrate the field stabilizers. Rivers and Strong, start with the injector assembly. This bucket of bolts was supposed to leave dry dock 6 months ago. I guarantee you, Columbia's going to warp out of orbit before the end of the week. Let's get to work.
Matt, will you tell us who we've identified for Enterprise?
So here's a fellow that when you first see him, you blink and you miss him. But he shows up a little, you know, you see him a little better in season 4. And that is a fellow that is called Ensign Rivers. And he's interesting, I must say, mostly because of who he's played by more than his dialogue or anything. He's played by Seth MacFarlane, creator of Family Guy. And of course, Seth MacFarlane is kind of an interesting fellow in and of himself because he's the creator of Family Guy. And that's one side of him, but he also has a lot of interesting sort of other dimensions as a person, as a celebrity. He's very much into science, science and engineering and, you know, forwarding the sort of the STEM initiatives. He's also very much into classical music and like good jazz and stuff. He would totally fit in with like Vic Fontaine's crowd, you know. He's an interesting fellow, and so it's kind of neat that as both a sort of rising celebrity, because this was the early 2000s, so Family Guy was taking off for him, that he got to do the thing that I think a lot of us would love to do, which is as a fan somehow get a role, you know, get a walk-on role in the current, you know, Star Trek production. And so he was able to do that. And so he pops up in season 3 during the Zindi arc, and he basically just gets yelled at by Trip.
Yeah, he does.
But the cool part is in season 4, they give him at least a few more lines during the whole Klingon augment virus storyline. He shows up.
Right, because he's not on the Enterprise in that, right? I think he's on the Columbia.
He shows up on the Columbia. He's transferred to the Columbia. Only to serve under Trip again, by the way, which is pretty funny. But there you go. So it's just kind of a neat little two quick shot cameo in Enterprise.
And I think everyone knows that Seth MacFarlane is a huge Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge Star Trek fan.
There's been a ton of Family Guy things that are little mini Star Trek parodies. And then there's a new... Have you guys heard about this new show that he's working on?
No.
Yeah, Orville or whatever?
Yes, yeah. Orville. So it's basically... Orville. I think it was announced like last summer, and there hasn't really been much said about it. And I think... I believe Fox is producing it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be... It sounds like it's going to be kind of a Star Trek... ish show.
Yeah.
Like, it's supposed to be a dramedy in space.
Yeah.
But it's very much like there's a ship and a captain and blah blah blah. Like, it sounds like almost like a Star Trek. I don't want to say parody, but certainly homage.
Yeah, that'd I think it's cool. An homage, because he loves Trek, so I'm sure it's more of an homage.
But it's
there are so many. I'm sorry.
It's interesting that it's a dramedy. So it's not a straight up comedy, and it's not a straight up drama sci-fi. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what he does with it.
Seth MacFarlane's, you know, got comedy in his bones, so obviously he can't be a total, you know, he can't do all drama. He's got to throw something in there.
And, you know, there is a ton of Star Trek references in Family Guy.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, tons.
You could probably make a 10-minute clip reel of all the Star Trek references.
In fact, it probably exists on YouTube.
Oh, it's got
I'm sure it does. And then, you know, he... produced that show Blunt Talk that Patrick starred in and that Brent Spiner was a regular guest star on. Yep. So, you know,
and then to his credit,
he gets his Trek fill. So
he does. Then to his credit, in sort of the real world science kind of vein, he's also responsible for going to Carl Sagan's widow and saying, hey, you know, the world could use Cosmos again and getting Cosmos going again.
Oh, I didn't realize that at all.
Brandon Braga.
Yep.
Yeah.
He and Brandon Braga was involved in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
The two of them were really passionate about it and got that whole, you know, sort of new season made with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Which, by the way, if anyone listening hasn't watched the new Cosmos,
so good.
Please watch it. It'll blow your mind, just like the Carl Sagan version did.
Yeah, the Carl Sagan one's a classic, too. If you haven't seen that, check that out as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. So he's interesting because a lot of people poo-poo him, and rightfully so, kind of, for the crass, you know, kind of random... junk that sometimes Family Guy is, but a lot of times there's some really fun kind of smart stuff inside Family Guy. And of course, as we've just said, there's a ton of little Trek references, sometimes not so little, sometimes very like cool obvious Trek things that he works into Family Guy.
There was that time he when he hosted the Oscars where he did a bit with William Shatner in costume.
That's probably
the last time we'll ever see Captain Kirk in uniform.
Probably.
By the way, as we're recording this today, Mr. Shatner is turning 86 years old.
That's right. It's March 22nd.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Bill.
Happy birthday, Mr. Shatner.
Truly the best of times.
The youngest 86-year-old on the planet.
No,
that is true. It is amazing.
Good heavens.
It's amazing what he does at 86.
Yep.
So much energy.
All right. Should we move on to our next...
Yeah, the next one is if I can segue. So we specifically didn't want to have any villains on this list. We'll probably do a separate one about minor villains, but we wanted this to be support characters. But the next one, while you could not call him villainous, I think you could call him antagonistic. Would that be too far off base?
No, I don't think so.
No, that sounds about right.
Yeah, but Brian, why don't you
a thorn in the side, you know.
Brian, why don't you tell us what you find particularly compelling about Mr. Harry Mudd?
Well, let's introduce him first, shouldn't we?
Full name, please.
Harcourt Fenton Mudd.
Ah! That, gentlemen, is a shrine to the memory of my beloved Stella. Oh, Stella, my wife.
Dead?
Oh, no, merely deserted. You see, gentlemen, behind every great man, there is a woman urging him on. And so it was with my Stella. She urged me on into outer space. Not that she meant to, but with her continual, eternal, confounded nagging. Well, I think of her constantly. And every time I do, I go further out into space.
That's very interesting. You leave your wife and then bring her along.
I had the androids construct a perfect replica of Stella so that I could gaze upon her and rejoice in her absence.
All right. Mr. Harry Mudd, the lovable rogue of the Star Trek universe.
He is lovable.
He is.
Even though he is a total freaking slimeball. Like, he's just one of those guys that you cannot completely hate.
Mm.
Yeah.
I feel like you could give him a hug and it would be okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Even though you know that he's been involved in some unbelievably shady stuff.
Yeah.
But he's just got kind of a twinkle in his eye. And Roger Carmel, the actor who played him, just...
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Embraced that role with absolute relish. Like, it just... He's far more likable than he should be. Let's put it that way.
Mm.
And it probably has a lot to do with the way Carmel played him.
Yeah, well said.
Yep, I think so.
The amusing episode, obviously, of his is the I, Mud episode from the second season when Harry somehow ends up on a planet run by robots and lures the Enterprise there so that he can leave, I guess. And it's played as a total... I think the episode, for the most part, is played like a total farce. Especially, like, when they try to get the machines to overload so they start acting very illogically.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They used that in in clips from that.
It's one of the more over-the-top moments from the original series.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was kind of a running foil for Kirk. He, you know, he was in two episodes of the original series, and he was in an animated episode.
Yes, he was. Oh, that's Don't forget TAS.
TAS where counts.
Mud's Passion, it was called, and he was selling a love potion, I believe.
Yep.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So Harry's always got a scheme. Yeah. Always got a scheme.
But it's not the Venus drug?
No, see, it's funny. They kind of recycled that, but not quite. This one is supposed to let you... It's the typical love potion, you know, kind of story of like, oh yeah, this one will let, you know, someone fall in love with you. Versus the Venus drug, which was the whole like, oh, these chicks look better to you kind of thing.
Right.
Similar, but not quite. The same kind of scam, basically, but not quite the same one. Yeah. Yep, so he cons poor Christine into thinking that Spock will finally return her affections in TAS.
Aww.
Not cool, Harry. That's not cool.
Yeah, seriously.
It doesn't work, but what it does do is give Spock Kirk shippers a heck of a good moment.
Oh,
yeah, it does.
Because they really like each other for a minute.
Spock, my good friend.
Yeah.
Okay, here's wow.
I should watch this episode.
You should. It's pretty bad otherwise, yeah. But you should watch
it. Yeah, Kayla still needs to finish off her TAS education.
I've only watched a couple.
There's only 22 episodes. Yeah. It's worth watching for sure.
I know. I liked the ones I saw. And it is the last Trek that I need to see that's on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've obviously seen everything else. And since TAS was never, like, really canon, I was like, I don't have to go back and watch that. But then after talking to Brian in particular, I'm like, I should watch this.
Well, and these days, CBS deems it as canon.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate over the years about whether it was canon or not.
Yeah, well, I was always in the camp of only live action and on screen counted.
Yeah, although there's a huge argument against that, which is like most of the staff and of TOS wrote for TAS, like developed it somehow. So it's hard to say.
And there's definitely stuff like we talked about, I believe, in in the new JJ movies. There's stuff that's pulled directly out of
from yesteryear.
Yesteryear.
Man, that episode is canon. Influence.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the a great episode of Star Trek, period.
Yeah, I'm happy by with DC that Fontana. Being canon.
The other thing is,
DC Fontana totally counts.
The other thing is TAS won Star Trek its first Emmy, and so that's not terrible.
Oh.
Yep.
Very true.
Also, they literally meet the devil at one point. So they meet the devil in TAS and in Final Frontier. So they got it covered.
That's true.
Friend Kirk.
Yeah, friend Kirk.
But do they meet Abraham Lincoln in space?
No, but that's... You can't beat that.
You can't beat that.
No, that's pretty rad.
It's not every day you run into a president of the United States floating around in a chair in deep space.
In a chair for some reason.
In a chair, yeah.
Where did the chair come from?
That's how Kirk remembers him.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's...
Anyway, we're going way off topic here.
I'm going to bring back to Harry Mudd. So I always kind of wished that Harry Mudd had been in trouble with Tribbles instead of Cyrano Jones.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. That would have been fun.
Because Cyrano Jones is basically a poor man's Mudd.
He's the same character.
Yeah, definitely.
He is. Although I think Cyrano Jones is much more of an innocent, a real innocent.
I agree.
That's true. He's more of a doofus. Is just trying to sell stuff.
Yeah.
He's just trying to get by. He's just trying to get by in life. Harry's in a whole other category.
Yeah. So Harry would have known the tribbles are like terribly invasive, whereas Cyrano just didn't know.
I thought he knew. Did he not know?
It kind of seemed like he knew. How could maybe. He not know?
I think he knew. Yeah. He knew.
Yeah. How could he have not known?
I don't know.
He said, no, he alludes to it. He goes, how do I maintain my stock? How do you think I maintain my stock? If I know they breed quickly.
True. Okay, so Harry Mudd would have delivered that way more skeezy. Let's put it that way.
He would have found a way to exploit it somehow, Harry.
Anyway. We've digressed again.
That's all right. We also have to mention they name drop Harry Mudd in Star Trek Into Darkness.
That's right.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Right, because he appears in the comic book, right?
His comic book is a whole different tangent because that's actually his half-Bajoran daughter in the comic book, but whatever.
Oh, that's right.
Of course. You know, in a way, each of us has a half-Bajoran daughter.
Right, exactly. Somewhere among the stars. But anyway,
you got kind of Rod Serling there on me. That was nice.
Oh, wow. True, right? Behind this door. Yeah. No, but so for people who don't know that there's this little side comic that the guy that, you know, Orsi and Kurtzman kind of help write. Yeah, it's just a nice, really a fun little wink and a nod to, hey, that's probably Harry Mudd's ship that they confiscated, you know, from him.
Right.
Which is fun. And I actually think they should have left it that way, to be honest with you, to make this whole side story in a comic book where it's not Harry Mudd, but his daughter. Like, okay, whatever. But it's cool. Whatever.
Man. Anyway,
it's cool.
Do we have anything else to say about Harcourt, Fenton, Mudd?
Okay, I just want to say I feel dumb that I didn't realize this until now, but the title I, Mudd is a play on I, Robot, because the episode is about robots. Yes. And Gene Roddenberry's friends with Isaac Asimov, and I can't believe in 30 years I haven't realized that.
What is wrong with me, Jared?
Jesus, Jared.
You have to revoke your geek credentials for making such an egregious error.
Logic is a little bird.
It's like I'm taking stupid pills over here.
Yeah. Logic is a bunch of pretty flowers that smell bad.
That is still one of the best things where they just try to mess with those robots until the classic, you know, smoke from the ears.
I am not programmed
to respond in that area.
I'd like to see people try that on their self-driving cars, see if they can make them go crazy.
We could try it on Siri right now.
Let's do it.
I bet Siri has a smart-ass answer for that.
What do I say to it, to Siri?
Do what Brian just said. That would be hilarious. Logic is, what is it, flowers that smell bad? Or pretty flowers?
Logic is a bunch of pretty flowers that smell bad.
Okay,
I imagine there are enough.
I'm going to say to Siri and we'll see what happens. Logic is a bunch of pretty flowers that smell bad.
Let me check that. Here's what I found on the web for logic is a bunch of pretty flowers that
I bet
smell
it hits
bad.
A Star Trek website then. Here I was hoping some guys at Apple were big Star Trek nerds and a pre-programmed Siri.
That's a pretty specific one, though.
Yeah, but that's, you know, Star Trek nerds are everywhere in this kind of stuff. You'd think they have some good sassy responses for that.
Oh, Siri.
Darn it, Siri.
Siri's only good if you ask her about, like, Hal.
Oh, that's true. You can ask her about Hal. That's right.
Oh, speaking of which, I just read this article on the BBC website a couple days ago about a computer that has learned how to read lips. And I'm like, oh, great. That's exactly what we need them to not be able to do.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, that's not exactly good. Yeah.
No, this is not going to end well for any of us.
Cautionary tale, people. Come on, like, pay attention. You can't do that. Seriously. Yeah. Skynet and Hal coming right now. Look out, you know?
Okay, well.
Okay.
Anything else about Harry? We're ready to move on to the next one.
I think we're ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we want it? Which one do we want to talk about? The Klingon or the Trill?
Let's do the Trill.
Let's do that. Okay, I agree. Let's.
He's kind of fun.
Let's play the clip. Let's play the clip.
I'm going to my office for a while.
Benjamin, you do recognize me, don't you?
Curzon.
Don't tell me the nose gave me away, huh? What's the matter? Aren't you happy to see me?
Of Of course. Of course. Oh, well, so where's Jadzia?
That's all right. I told her I wanted to come see you, that we'd meet up later at Quark's. I'm going to give that little toad the scare of his life.
You sound like Odo.
I am Odo.
I don't understand. I thought you were Curzon.
I'm both. The Guardian thinks it has something to do with my shape-shifting nature. It's as if Odo and Curzon have been joined. It's proving to be quite an interesting experience for both of us. In any case, the Guardian says it's nothing to worry about. I like the beard, by the way.
Yeah?
Absolutely. So, when is Cassidy Yates coming back,
Not you two.
Ah, she's a fine-looking woman, Ben. Reminds me of the girl you took up with on Peleo Station.
Why don't we join Jadzia in Quark's while Jake finishes homework?
I'll tell you all about it later.
Curzon, remember?
Okay, so I specifically wanted to talk about this character. That would be Mr. Curzon Dax. And while Jadzia and Ezri appear in, if not every, certainly almost every episode of Deep Space Nine, Curzon only appears in two. One is as a flashback where he's dying, and the other is technically where his And the other is where his memories have been transmitted to Odo, and the character is played by Rene Auberjonois. So he doesn't appear in very much, but they talk about him constantly, and he seems like he was quite the character, right?
Yeah, I feel as if we have a pretty good idea who he was just because he's so well talked about. It's kind of cool.
Right. Old man.
Old man. Yeah. And, you know, like he's Benjamin Sisko's mentor and he taught him everything he knew. And he was like bosom buddies with Kang, Koloth, and Kor. And there's that great season two episode Blood Oath where they go, you know, avenge the murder of these Klingons' children. He died making love to Vanessa Williams, if I recall correctly. So Curzon really seemed to have a crazy life.
Not a bad way to go.
I forgot about that. That's right.
It's pretty good. And the whole time I'm watching Deep Space Nine, whenever there's a mention to Curzon, I always think, well, why isn't he the one on the show? Why do we have to deal with these less interesting Daxes when the more interesting one was there?
That's me. Jadzia is pretty kick-ass, I must say.
See, I am very partial to Ezri. Very partial.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, I like her okay, but nah, Jadzia.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm glad you're Team Ezri.
Oh, how?
Yeah, you'll have to tell Nikki that the next time you see her.
Last time at Vegas, I had to apologize to Nikki for calling her the prettiest girl in Starfleet too much and say, I hope you don't mind, you know, don't objectify you or whatever. And she looks at me like I'm an idiot and says, why would I mind being told that? And I'm like, okay, next time I'll just say it loudly when Terry Farrell is in earshot.
Oh, there you go. That's great.
Anyway.
It'll come to blow between you and Adam Nimoy, but maybe this is getting way too inside baseball.
It is.
Yeah. Oh,
that's right. He'll be like, what'd you say about my woman?
Yeah.
That is a lot. oh, boy.
Anyway, Curzon. There honestly isn't a lot to say beyond that because he appears in so little. But he's a great character. They did a wonderful job of shaping this guy that you never see or very rarely see off screen with so many interesting stories and seeing how he's influenced not just Benjamin Sisko so much, but he also has this avuncular relationship with Jake, which is kind of cool. And then, of course, we see echoes of Curzon in the two Daxes throughout all 7 years. And so when they were announcing the timeline for Discovery, I did the math quickly, and I'm like, oh, wait, is Curzon the one who was the Dax host? Could they get him? And no, Discovery's a little too early for that. I believe the Dax host that would be appropriate for Discovery is Emeny Dax, who was the gymnast.
Right. So had an affair with Leonard McCoy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so hopefully we see Emeny.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it would be very cool.
That would be very smart of them to just like have that in the background somewhere or a mention or something, at least.
Yeah, how could it hurt?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Also, that's such a minor character that if you brought back, it wouldn't be like hitting you over the head with like, hey, look, we're making a reference to something you know. Hey, look, it's another Star Wars movie with blue milk in the background. Remember blue milk?
Yeah.
<You're> right.
And the 3D chess, and oh, come on, guys.
Yeah, it's like you're going to do this every year until we die.
Yup.
Well, hey, if Disney can make it work, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's a whole other topic.
Exactly. But I thought Curzon is an interesting character. I have to mention him. The episode is called Facets is the name of the episode, where there's this Trill ritual where previous hosts are transmitted into the minds of friends of the current host. And Rene Auberjonois does a wonderful job with it. I think he's one of the best actors the franchise has ever had. And
Hell yeah.
And it's kind of disappointing to me that the Odo character is always so stolid. And it's a great irony that the guy who can shapeshift has what I feel like the least fluid character.
Yeah, the most rigid personality.
Yeah.
And maybe that's by design. But it's so great to see him be able to kind of bust loose, and, you know, the way when Curzon's mind goes into him that he immediately shapeshifts to have the spots. There's a cute little special effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, yeah, Curzon Dax. Great minor character. Sorry we didn't get to see more of him.
Very much so. Be interesting to see more.
Can I take a very small tangent?
Please.
I have a question.
By all means.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
And this is something maybe we can talk about later. Maybe we'll just pose the question and take my answer off the air, so to speak. But why, when he can make anything, like he could be like a dinosaur or he could do anything perfectly except for a human face. Like, really?
Okay. Yeah. There's an episode called Paradise Lost where Odo has shapeshifted into a bird, and they comment on this, and they say, "Wow, you look like make a terrific bird." And he said, "Yeah, but I probably don't look that good to other birds." And so
that's right, they do.
Yeah.
Huh, okay.
It's a little CYA kind of, like, hey.
Yeah.
It was the kind of thing, though, when the series started, I assumed that his face would become more human as it went over, as he kind of refined the process.
I wish it did.
But it actually went the opposite direction. They made him more alien-looking as the series went on. Because in the first couple episodes, he kind of looks like a normal guy with just a little bit of goop on his face.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. Yeah.
A little bit of goop on.
That's true. He's a little smushed, but he's fine, you know?
The goop on the forehead alien.
Plus, like, he could do hands perfectly, but not a nose.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's just unbelievable.
And he could also perfectly recreate a Bajoran communicator. Like,
right. Yeah, they cheated with that. That was cheating.
That's right.
Because that went with
him. Yeah, everywhere.
Like, that would dissolve with him.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay. And he can't do some wrinkles? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Come on, guys.
Oh, well.
Now, there's an episode
that didn't seem very well thought out.
I
think the reason they do it from a meta standpoint is if he can perfectly imitate anyone's face, that would resolve a lot of problems really easily. Like, if he could perfectly imitate Gul Dukat, then all of a sudden that removes a lot of tension.
Right. Problem solved. He goes and does Dukat, and that's the end of it. Yeah.
And so that's the reason. But especially once, like, he joins the Great Link and has some experiences with the female shapeshifter who never got a name.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like at that point, maybe he would have learned some tricks, don't you think?
But, like, she sucks at doing faces, too. They all suck at doing faces.
Well, of course, her excuse was that she was mirroring him to be familiar. Was basically her excuse.
Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah,
but still, you know, it's like...
And whenever changeling infiltrators look like someone else, they look like someone else. Like, there's one in that same episode on Earth with Odo where one appears as Miles O'Brien. There's one who appears as a Bashir, and he gets the face perfectly.
Oh. Yeah. So but it's just... Oh, it really theory, is just Odo.
More, yeah, in theory, they're more experienced changelings who have been part of the Link their whole lives and orphans. You know, they do have, like, these little in-universe explanations for it, but it does kind of suck because it's like... Yeah, but Odo's been around people for quite a while now. Why can't you do better?
somehow they, living in a puddle on a planet away from everyone, are able to perfectly take humanoid faces. But he who spent the last 30 years among humanoids is unable to do it.
Yeah,
but again, it's all from a story standpoint. It's just a story standpoint. They didn't want to make Odo that powerful.
I would like Odo to have gotten better, though, especially, like you said, after the Link. And I also kind of think, like, it would have been a cute kind of maybe a little too, like, throw up-y cute, but it would have been really cute if, like, he got better since actually having a relationship with Kira, too.
Yeah.
Like he was trying to do better for her or something, you know,
Well, and I want to, you know, just bring it back to the episode a teeny bit. When he is appearing as Curzon, they change the makeup so he doesn't look quite as Odo-ish. Yeah, they make him a little bit more human.
He gets, like, a hairline, too, doesn't he? Uh-huh. Like, a kind of the old man hairline and stuff. Yeah. Yeah,
and it's not tremendous. He's still Odo-ish, but they soften it a little bit. Now, I'm going to speculate. Part of it could also be and maybe this is wrong, it could be Renee's vanity, because if he's underneath all that makeup, he doesn't age.
True.
But that could be wrong.
It's true.
Well, and of course, you can't have a shapeshifter age. He's not supposed to show age. So
sure.
Yeah. Of course, we had that with Data anyway, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but he could, he could have said, I'm choosing to age. And he could have done a thing where towards the end of the series, yep. he got better at doing faces and then yep. decided
and he's like, hey, I'm middle-aged. Yeah.
And exactly. decided to say, I'm pretty good at faces now, but, like, I'm just going to use my face, and I find it unethical to shapeshift into other people's faces because it's stealing their identity.
Done.
There you go.
In-universe reason right there. Done.
Yeah, yeah. Or they say he's only been able to figure out how to do one face well.
Mm-hmm. There you right. go.
Yeah, and maybe he could even say that the reason is because he only worked at that face because he sure. wanted to create his own face or what he yeah. thought he yeah. wanted to look like.
Took years yeah. of practice or something.
Although yeah. he does sort of look like Dr. Mora. He did get the hairdo from yeah. him and stuff. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But whatever. That's no big deal.
Dr. Mora not on our list of favorite minor characters.
Because he's no. dark.
Although I love that actor.
He is kind of a jerk, especially when you hear what he did to poor Odo. Because he wasn't sure what he was.
Poor unknown yeah. sample.
Yeah, exactly. Oh well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Curzon Daxby hardly knew you. All right, Kayla, do you want to key up the next one?
Sure.
Your name even kind of sounds like hers.
I know.
Oh, yeah, you should do it.
How about it?
It's one of my favorite things about her. Her name. This is the Klingon that we alluded to earlier, played by Susie Plaxen. Can probably guess by now that we were talking about Kalar. I feel like her and I share some kind of a bond. If I were Klingon, I feel like I would be like Kalar.
All right, let's listen to the clip.
Knowing their mission might help us understand them.
There is nothing to understand. These are Klingons. They'll attack. In their minds, we're the enemy. And there's no way we're going to talk them out of that.
And I do not appreciate being interrupted.
And I do not appreciate wasting my time.
We were instructed to come up with options.
There aren't any. The assignment's hopeless.
There are always options.
Oh, are there? Tell me, whatever happened to that wonderful Klingon fatalism of yours?
My experiences aboard this ship have taught me most problems have more than one solution.
Starfleet hasn't improved you one bit. You're as stubborn as ever.
Are you going to carry out your duties, or aren't you?
All right. I will. Upon due consideration of the problem and careful examination of all possible options, my original recommendation stands.
So good.
And then she goes yeah. and breaks yeah. the coffee table.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, she does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Deanna comes in and makes a joke about it, I think.
Yes, she does. Breaks right. that tension.
What a performance, though.
Yeah, her no, this
and
is,
Michael Dorn, the two of them.
Yep.
That is yeah. awesome. I love it.
It's great. You're like, yeah. gee, did they used to be lovers? Is there romantic
right?
tension there? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
I no, love the way great, she speaks, too. I think it's a very convincing Klingon. The way she enunciates when
yeah.
she's getting very passionate about things.
And she's not spitty about it like other, full Klingon women. Like the Lursa and Bator are very angry and spitty kind of women.
Yeah.
And she's not. Yeah. You can tell. It's like the half human side. She's just pissed. But yeah, no, it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Susie Plaxen did an amazing job. Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Amazing job.
And we should point out also that Susie Plaxen has played a bunch of characters. Including Dr. Saylar, female Q.
I love Dr. Saylar.
And an Andorian in Enterprise. Is it Tara?
Yeah, it's Tara, yeah.
Tara.
Yeah. The same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I forget how they pronounce it. But
yeah, I'm trying to remember. So, she's been a Vulcan, a Klingon, and an Andorian.
Yeah, which is really cool when you think about it. That's very cool that she's been able to play all three, kind of big races from TOS, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We knew. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always usually, got a very good presence. Her turn in Enterprise was really great
mm-hmm.
because she was a kind of a female warrior there who was suspicious of, you know, Shran, the leader, Shran's want for peace. So she always has a good presence, and often, as you can tell, kind of a female warrior thing going on. But I like her a lot.
I think if there had been a fifth season of Enterprise, they've said that Jeffrey Combs would have been a full-time character on the ship.
Yeah.
And if that happened, then they would have brought her back more.
I hope so. She totally was a great second-in-command for him. So, but back to Kalar.
Back to Kalar.
Because she's great, too. Like, a great character. And who I am really pissed that they killed off in her second episode.
Okay, I'm glad you bring that up. Because I am, too. Because I'm sad we didn't get to see more of her. But the thing I like about that is typically when they introduce a minor character, whether it's a love interest or not, and they kill them off, it's to make things simpler, right? To hit the reset button is the term that gets used. And when they kill Kalar off, they actually make things more complicated by doing that, because then Worf has to adopt Alexander. And Alexander wouldn't become a recurring character until the following year. But this is a way of saying, of showing a kind of continuity and that was unusual for a show in the early 90s that mainly just had its sights set on syndication. Because that, you know, nowadays when you can binge watch on Netflix or you can, you know, follow up on wikis or whatever, it's easier to do a long-term story over 8 episodes or 10 episodes or however long. But in the 90s, that was very difficult to do. And so you just focused on making each episode its own thing, and then you hit the reset button. And so killing her was more courageous than not killing her, if I can say that. Maybe you disagree.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree.
Can I just say that I would 1,000 times rather have Kalar than Alexander?
Yes.
I mean, sorry, but yeah. Okay.
I do not disagree. I do not disagree.
The mini Bob and the little cat suit.
But Jared does have a good point that it is a really sort of brave, kind of good storytelling for her to be killed.
Yeah.
I do get that. I get that part, but yeah. Whiny little Alexander, huh?
Also, there's this I'm on the Memory Alpha page right now for Kalar, and there's this fantastic promotional shot of her, and they're all in makeup and in costume, of her and Worf and Alexander, and it's like this family photo. Like, it's like, it looks like they, like, went to Penny's and got, like,
I think they used that. They used it as set dressing later in Worf's quarters, I'm pretty sure.
It's amazing. Like, can you imagine Worf being like, yes, let's take a family photo. I'll totally.
Say cheese.
Yeah, totally.
Mott the Barber took the photo for them.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, Mr. Mott.
Yep.
Ah, crap.
Love Mr. Mott.
He would have been good on this list. How many?
I was about to say.
Oh. Well, we could, you know.
Although,
I think he's in more than 3 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's also too minor. Like, who, describe who Mr. Mott is.
Besides saying
he's a barber.
He's a Bolian who loves to talk and gossip.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, that's pretty good.
He's quite the chatterbox.
He's got an opinion on everything.
He has an opinion on everything, that's right.
Okay.
Because there's that one episode where, okay, well, maybe we should really just do him. Okay.
No. Mott appears.
We're here now, we might as well.
Mott appears in 4 episodes. 4 episodes. Oh. So he just barely sneaks past. Oh, no, I tell a lie. No. There's 4 references. He appears 3 times, but and then in the 4th reference here on Memory Alpha, that's just when Picard pretends to be Mott the Barber.
That's so right. So, boom.
He's there.
Oh, 3 times. Yeah.
Dude, check this out. The internet, life is happening right in front of you, and you've got a front row seat.
Oh,
is there anything else we want to say about Kalar?
Well, Kalar, of course, just that she's awesome. I think she made a really good impression on the entire fandom. For just 2 episodes, you know?
And I think the popularity and the impression that she made in those 2 episodes is why they never brought Dr. Salar back, because she hadn't been too similar.
Yeah.
I like Dr. Salar.
Dr. Salar is terrific. She's
mentioned a bunch. Yeah.
She is. She gets named dropped a lot. And there's a lot of memory beta stuff about Dr. Salar, too. She's a remarkable guest star in an otherwise, I think, kind of lame season 2 episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. To love Susie him Plaxton. Is to know him.
Yeah. Susie Plaxton is one of those actresses that can make more out of a character than what's probably on the page.
Oh, I assume so. Yeah. She seems
like you could tell she's just one of those actors that brings like a lot to it. So that I'm guessing that there wasn't as much of Kalar on the page as there ended up being on the screen. Mm.
I would bet, because how do you tell them, like, hey, you should kind of be a Klingon, but tone it down by like half. You know what I mean? You can't say that to somebody. That's good acting is what that is.
Yeah, no, she's great.
Yeah.
She's great. All right.
Okay, so we want to talk about Mr. Mott. We're going to do that? Why not?
Yeah, I think let's do Mr. Mott.
Since we're here, why not?
It's fun. Yeah, we could do that.
Okay, Matt, what do you want to say? Your name is the one that sounds most like his, so you get to lead the
charge. Ah, that's true. Okay, so apparently I'm a
Mr. Matt.
Yeah, apparently I'm a chatty Ebolian barber.
Apparently.
So yeah, Mr. Mott, he's our friendly shipboard barber in Star Trek The Next Generation. And I guess he's just, you know, he's kind of an interesting fellow. We only see him a few times. He's mentioned a couple times, I believe, as well. But mostly, he's just this kind of friendly, gregarious Bolian, you know, so that he's the blue-skinned Bolian race. He seems to also like to give input to the senior staff, as we've heard a few times, that he likes to say how he would have done things while, you know, trimming Riker's beard.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a hoot, because here's this guy who is probably, I assume he's a civilian posted there, kind of like the 10 forward guys. So yeah, he's just there, but you know, he's an armchair tactician and some other things, as we learn in a few episodes. So it's kind of a hoot to see a guy like that.
Well, and the thing I like about that is it's a situation cutting your hair where you have these guys who are always in command who can always get somebody else to do something that's, you know, minor or trivial, but this is something they have to do themselves. They can't order an ensign to go get their hair cut for them. And so he's got them as a captive audience, right? And so all of a sudden, if he has opinions about strategy with the Cardassians, he can tell you about it.
Yeah, that's very true.
His first appearance was Ensign Roe, so the same episode that introduced her. So two great characters introduced by one writer. Well done, whoever wrote that.
Yeah, awesome.
Bolians are such a pushy bunch.
They are. That or they're really big fraidy cats. In Voyager, there's a Bolian crew member who's like a big fraidy cat. It's kind of funny.
He's so terrific, though.
He is, right. Was that Chell, right?
Chell or something? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So... yeah, the Bolians are kind of an interesting race. Like, we don't really see them. They're just sort of there, you know, newer Federation members compared to TOS anyway, newer. And
right.
Yeah, they're just kind of there. So it's kind of cool to see. They're also some of the more alien looking, you know, without going crazy alien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Not, just, you know, they're not.
Paint them blue, split them in the middle. There you go.
Yeah, but at least that's better than, you know, put a couple of lumps somewhere.
Yeah, ridges, forehead ridges.
Yeah. So I kind of like it. I mean, I like the fact that the Bolians are humanoid, but they look like maybe they could have been aquatic at one point or something, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, everybody's gotta get a haircut.
Yeah, they do. Well, yeah, they do. Except, of course, ironically, Bolians.
Oh, that's true. They do not. Yeah. That is true. Maybe that's why he's in the profession. He's jealous of, you know, the other kind of mammalian species that need a haircut.
His presence was also very much like Guinan's was also the kind of thing to make the Enterprise D feel less like the original 1701, to make it feel less like, you know, a military vessel and more like a place for families and that kind of thing.
Like a cruise ship.
Yeah.
A cruise ship, yeah.
Yeah, definitely the cruise ship feel. Oh, especially, you know, season one.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's interesting, though, that in the future we still... So you can see why it's... Okay, so people who might be interested in doing this trade, because, hey, it's the 24th century, if that's the trade you like, we'll go forth and, you know, be a barber. But really, like, I'm pretty sure the computer could, like, you know, give you a laser haircut in 2 seconds and it would be fine, right?
Yeah, in fact...
So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, there is an... I think it's a first season episode where Geordi is
shaving.
And
yeah, he's got a little laser shaver.
Yeah, well, yeah. Why, I'm sure there's a more efficient way to do this.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. And so it's kind of funny because you would think that there would just be like, you know, like the 24th century kind of, remember the Flobies, you know, the little vacuum attached to like razor, you know, things. So I'm sure you could just be like, yep, all right, you know, number two, vup, vup, done. But yet, it's the 24th century. So like, hey, if you want to go forth and cut hair in sort of the old fashioned style, that's cool. Oh, and hey, like we actually like that, so we'll put you on the flagship of the Federation, because that's how we roll, you know?
All right, Mr. Mott.
Yep, Mr. Mott. All right.
Well, is that...
We salute you.
So, I think we're ready to wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
Come to a close.
Indeed we are.
Now, we do have one minor character we didn't get to, and so go to the comments and see if you can guess who it was. And if you guess it right, then we'll mention you in the next episode. How about that?
Ooh, this is going to be hard, you guys.
Should we give him any clues?
Well, our criteria are, again, they cannot have appeared in more than three episodes, so it's three or less.
And not a villain.
Not a villain.
And not technically a villain.
Is there a minimum, too? Like,
No, because we've done one, basically, I think.
No, because the ones we talked about appeared in two or three episodes.
Okay, so Curzon Dax is kind of a one-ish, one and a half.
One and a half, yeah. Yeah. But this one, the one I'm thinking of, only appeared in one episode.
Yes.
So. Okay, so it's only one, the one we're missing, only appeared
in one. So he gets harder because of that, because he's a single episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll give a hint, it's TNG.
We're really narrowing it down now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else. We could say in terms of minor characters, very, very minor. Not only did he just appear in one episode, he appeared in just one scene.
Yeah. About 2 minutes long. About 2 minutes long, maybe?
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good hint. All right. That's it.
That's it.
There you go. That's it.
That's it.
He's a very charismatic 2 minutes on the screen.
What do you get if you get it right? If someone guesses what do they get?
We'll give them a hearty nerd salute.
We can mention them on the next episode. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. Just a shout out. Yeah.
So before we go, I would like to sort of steal the Trek-nic-dote from Jared this week to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Carl, who tweeted at us recently saying, after our last episode of the Shuttlepod, which was a deep dive of Star Trek Nemesis, and Carl said, loved the review of Nemesis. He mentioned us all and then said, you had me laughing out loud at times. Nicely done. Then he went on to say, I think you guys have got your podcasting groove. It was like hanging out with friends. So that was really awesome to hear for me, certainly. I think that's kind of what we've always been going for, right?
Yeah.
My vision for this podcast was like, you know, all of us kind of sitting down over some beers and, you know, chatting about Trek. And it sounds like we've at least nailed that for Carl, so... Thanks very much for listening and for saying that.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate
it. Yeah, we do appreciate the feedback because, it's a little bit of affirmation that we're doing a good job and that we're not speaking into a void.
Totally.
That people are listening and are enjoying it. So we appreciate it very much.
And we'll take, criticisms too.
We will.
Yep, absolutely.
We'll also take suggestions if you have other ideas for stuff we want to do. I mean, I think our best episode was the Pulaski one, which, Brian, that was your idea. I never would have thought of that. But if you have
really
narrow ideas like that we can hone in on, please share it with us.
Yep. Yeah, by all means.
All right. Well, thanks, guys,
cool.
for listening, and we'll see you again next time on the Shuttle Pod.
Thanks so much.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys. We'll be right back.